I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
You've been listening to him for the past 53 years.
High drive, left center, Davis to the wall, and gone, Perez.
He's the voice of Royals baseball in Kansas City.
Benintendi jumps, and he caught it right up against the side wall.
And he joins The Drive every Monday at 3 o'clock. Here's the Hall of Famer, Denny Matthews.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the brand new Odyssey app. We are very happy to head to the phone lines right now and be joined by our next guest. He is the voice of the Kansas City Royals. He is also in the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame. Denny Matthews joins us on the show today. Hey, Denny.
Hi, Carrington.
Denny, this team is 16-10. This team is in first place. You've always told me the end of April and Memorial Day is when you sort of evaluate a team. But it's hard not to get overly excited about what you've seen from this club the first 30 games of the season.
Yeah, it's off to a great start. That was one of their mindsets when they came to spring training. That was one of the things that Mike Matheny and the coaching staff was pointed toward, and the guys have responded very well. Yeah, I think they played very well in most departments, and hopefully it continues on from there.
My biggest message so far this season has been you can't play yourself really into the playoffs in the first month of the season, but you certainly can play yourself out of the playoffs. And for this organization, who typically hasn't gotten off to good starts in April, not only be playing good baseball, but be in first place and leading this division is a really encouraging sign.
Yeah, it's a good point you make. And obviously, you want to baseball season is ups and downs. We all know that. 162 games. Obviously, you're going to have some high points and low points, but you want to maximize your good streaks and minimize your spots where you're not playing as well as you had been, but consistency is so important, and so far so good.
16 out of the next 18 games for this club are in the division. You've now got a chance to see everybody. How do you sort of pencil in the American League Central?
Well, I still think Chicago is going to be a factor. Cleveland is usually, and I don't see any signs that that's changing. They're playing pretty well. They come into town for the series, and they're playing well. Minnesota's been a bit of a disappointment, I'm sure, to them. Detroit is awful, and the Royals have done very, very well.
I'm surprised the Minnesota Twins. Chicago is maybe a little bit below what I thought they were going to be, but it's still obviously a very long season, so I expect them to be there till the very end of the year. We talked about this division sort of being a two-horse race between the White Sox and the Twins. The Twins are six games back of the Royals after 1 month.
Yeah, and they will stabilize to a degree, I think. They did a pretty good job offensively in the recent series, but there's some big question marks on that team for me. So, I'm not sure they're going to be a big factor toward the end, but Cleveland is usually always around, and no matter what happens, they got rid of a couple of big pieces, a pitcher and their great shortstop, Lindor, over the winter, and Carrasco, their pitcher, and so you'd think, well, they're not as good as they were last year, but they still seem to come up with good pitching year after year, and good pitching is always going to keep you in the race, and they're going to keep you relevant, and so it is at this point in time. But Minnesota's been a disappointment. Cleveland has been a question mark, and now those questions are being answered, and so it goes.
Right now we're talking baseball with the Hall of Fame voice of the Kansas City Royals, Denny Matthews, as the Cleveland Indians come in for a homestand with the Kansas City Royals. Today we see Daniel Lynch for the first time up in the big leagues. He makes his major league debut. When you kind of look at this team, do you feel the buzz that's around this young rotation and these young arms that are starting to funnel in?
Yeah, and it's always fun to see a player make his major league debut, especially a pitcher, because he's right in the center of things, literally, and all eyes will be on him tonight. He'll be excited. He'll be nervous. He'll be wondering how he's going to do on the major league level. The clock won't go fast enough for him today. It's a long day. He'll go to the ballpark early, get the scouting report on Cleveland, talk to some of the guys, just kind of assimilate himself into the whole structure of what things are like on the big league level. And then a little after 7 o'clock, he'll go striding out to the mound to throw his first big league pitch, and I'm sure there'll be butterflies. His family and friends will be in from the East Coast, and it'll be a huge night for him. And it's always fun, I think, to see a player, a pitcher or a position player, make their major league debut. He's wondering what it's going to be like. He doesn't know, and so he'll know more 24 hours from now, but it's going to be a night that he'll always remember.
Denny, you've seen more of these than you can count. What are you looking for in a player's debut, especially as a pitcher?
Get through the first inning and be consistent. You want your first pitch to be a strike, and that one right down the middle, hopefully, but a good quality pitch in the strike zone, and you take it from there. You got good defense behind you. The butterflies are going to be there. There's going to be a tremendous point of relief after the first inning, especially if he gets out of it without allowing anything. And then he'll think and he'll realize that now I'm a big leaguer. I'm part of the club. And he'll go to the dugout, take a big, deep breath, settle in, and now he's in a baseball game, something he's been doing since he was 5 years old. And so it's just another baseball game. It's a higher level. You bet it is. But the first inning is the key.
That's interesting. You talk about settling in. I don't feel like this season we've seen Brad Keller settle in at all. For a guy who has been fairly consistent so far in his major league career, this year has gone anything but. What are you seeing now from Brad Keller that maybe wasn't there before?
Well, mostly consistency of location, but yeah, that's a mystery, and a lot of people are trying to figure it out, obviously, Brad especially. But, yeah, it's been weird because he's been so consistent. Even as a first-year player, he was pretty consistent and pretty good. So, and players and pitchers, position players, all go through slumps. It's a pitcher slump. And he and Cal Eldred and Mike Matheny will figure things out, and he'll be fine. He's not going to forget how to pitch over the winter. He's not going to lose his stuff over the winter. He's not 47 years old, so he's not over the hill. He'd like to be on the hill and pitching consistently.
Denny, what do you think the team should do? Because I sort of looked at it, and I know you're a big sample size and you can't overreact to a couple of starts. This is now 6 starts for Brad Keller, and we think he's a guy who can make 30, maybe to 35 starts. We're talking about a fifth of the season so far, and it's been largely inconsistent. What do you think the organization can do or should do to help get Keller back on track?
Well, I think maybe work on things when it's not your day to pitch. And then when it is your day to pitch, go out there with maybe a different mindset, a couple of new things mechanically, and see what happens. So I would say 1 or 2 more starts, and if things still aren't going the way he wants, the bullpen. And a lot of guys, starting pitchers, have been able to work things out coming in from the bullpen. So that would be probably the second option, and from that point on, we'll just have to wait and see.
At the opposite end of the spectrum is Danny Duffy. We had this conversation a couple of weeks ago where I thought he was playing his best baseball of his career. Now it's not really a question. He is playing his best baseball of a career. This is the best starter Royals pitcher has had since Zach Greinke the year he won the Cy Young. What's different with Duff this year that you haven't seen in the past?
Keep it simple. I think he has rejected all the things that have been swirling around in his head and changing little things maybe mechanically from time to time. And just being Danny Duffy, he seems to be free. That's the best way that I can describe it. He's having fun. He's just going out and keeping it simple and playing, hitting the target, making quality pitches and really having a good time. And that's the Danny Duffy that I see so far this year.
It's just exciting to see him put it together, because we've always known that the ability was there, but just it hasn't always connected at times. Hopefully he can stay healthy and keep this thing rolling. Obviously, he's going to have some regression to the mean. He's not going to do this the entirety of the season. But as you said, staying healthy, staying focused, staying patient, he's having a fantastic season where you got to start having the conversation about him being an all-star.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and I think another thing, too, and there's the old expression about he keeps getting in his own way in years past. He'd go a couple of good starts, then a couple of bad ones, then a good one, then a bad one, and so on and so forth. And now he's, again, I'll go back, he just seems to be more free, and his head is clear, and he's just having fun. He's just throwing to the catcher and hitting spots and making good quality pitches. His stuff has been very, very good, but his stuff has always been pretty good, very good at times. So, you're right. He's a completely different Danny Duffy, and it's fun to watch him.
Talking to you over the years has always told me to just be patient when it comes to hitters and just to give them time to kind of find their groove. Andrew Benintendi is a perfect example. He got off to a little bit of a slow start, but he was fantastic on this road trip.
Yeah, we talked about him maybe a month ago, you and I told you that when he was with Boston, especially his first couple of years there, I thought he was really a good player. And he's not the type of player that's going to knock your eyeballs out in one department, like tremendous power, or he can run like he's fastest runner in baseball. He does not everything great, but he does almost everything well, if that makes any sense. A five-tool player, but the tools are modest, but they're very effective.
We're coming up on 100 at-bats for Hunter Dozier at some point this week. When do you start to worry about him?
After another 100 at-bats, if he's still not in the groove. But I'm confident he'll be there. He's done it before. He's fought his way through an illness. The COVID got him, and pretty well over the winter, and so then the thumb. So he's gotten past a few of those obstructions, and I don't worry about Hunter Dozier. He's going to be fine.
Last question here, Denny. How fun is it just to see baseball matter again and be important in this city? You've obviously seen it go through waves and ups and downs, but just as someone that watches the team, follows the team, and covers them, it's just good to not have a football mentality about these games where every game is do or die, but when you look at series and then you have a stretch right now against teams in your division where you want to perform really well and then sort of advance to that next stage where you can start having the conversation about this being a possible wild card team.
Yeah, for sure. And I think people now have accepted the fact that the Royals are going to be a factor, and they're excited about it. When you win, everybody's on the bandwagon. When you're losing, why, people are dropping off the bandwagon. But I think if the team continues to play as well as they have for the first month, well, there are going to be more people on that wagon.
That is Denny Matthews, the Hall of Fame voice of the Kansas City Royals, joining us today on the show to talk about your first place, 16-10 Kansas City Royals, with Daniel Lynch making his major league debut today against the Cleveland Indians. Denny, always good talking baseball with you. Thanks for hopping on today.
You're welcome, Carrington.
Always good to catch up with the Hall of Fame voice of the Kansas City Royals, Denny Matthews. I don't think it's possible for us to accurately describe how well Danny Duffy has pitched so far this season with the Kansas City Royals. In every start but one, he's gone at least six innings. He has not given up two earned runs in any start that he has made so far this season. Earlier, Rob, you were talking about Keller and him putting guys on base and just giving them free bases off walks. Danny Duffy's strikeout to walk ratio right now is 34-9. 34-9. His ERA is still under a dollar. It's at 0.6 right now for Danny Duffy. We got to have the Cy Young conversation because obviously there's a lot left. We could start having the All-Star game conversation about Danny Duffy. If Duffy, let's say his ERA is around 3, heading into June, he has 4 wins right now, and I know the win-loss record isn't the best indicator of your worth and value as a starting pitcher. It does look really good in your argument to make the All-Star team. I mean, he's not that far away from having I am an All-Star, and I am in the conversation to start the All-Star game. That's how good Danny Duffy has been so far this season.
And one thing I am, on top of everything you said, I agree with. On top of everything else, how many years have we been asking, can Danny Duffy be a 200-inning guy? Can Danny Duffy be a 200-inning guy? And every year, no. The answer is just no. He cannot be a 200-inning guy. I'm not saying he's going to be a 200-inning guy this year, but he is going deep into ball games and remains effective deep into games. He has 30 innings already in five starts. You prorate that out. Let's say he gets 30 starts. He's going to be like, what, 180? 180 innings? 180-plus? Not only is Danny Duffy excellent, he is, I mean, there's not enough platitudes on earth talking about how good he has been this season. He is protecting the bullpen. He is doing this and more. He is doing everything we anticipated Brad Keller would do, but better. He's protecting the bullpen. He's going deep into games. He's striking dudes out. He's not walking guys. It is an absolute sight to behold, and I couldn't be happier for Duffy the guy, but as a great man once said, contract year, undefeated.
I was just going to say that. And he right now is maybe the best example and case study that we have for it. He's just pitching with a different sense of urgency because there needs to be a different sense of urgency. Danny Duffy is over the age of 30, but he is also a left-handed starting pitching, and those always retain their value. They're like MacBooks. Always retain your value. So if you're Danny Duffy and you've been unable to put it together for most of your career, putting it together now could be the difference between you signing a two-year, $20 million deal or signing a massive four-year contract and continuing to be a starter in this league. Duffy, I would say, up to this season was pretty much on the fringe. He was a fourth or fifth starter, but people really felt comfortable with him being their seventh or eighth inning guy. Right now, he's pitching like an ace. He's pitching like a legitimate number one that you feel comfortable with him going up against anybody in any rotation on any staff. That's how good Danny Duffy has been so far this season. So, again, it is impossible for us to accurately explain or describe how good Danny Duffy has been. He is one of the five best starting pitchers in baseball. And I would say the only definitive pitcher better than him this season has been Jacob DeGrom. There's probably some other guys we really deep dive in the numbers, but the only one that clearly sticks out is Jacob DeGrom that's been better than Danny Duffy. He has a 0.6 ERA. He's given up two earned runs this season. Two earned runs, and both were home runs. 34 to 9 walkout, strike to walkout ratio. He's pitched 30 innings in his six starts. Like, he's been consistent. They're getting him out at the right time. He's giving them a chance to win every single time that he takes the hill. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll get back into the NFL draft. And Rob questions if the Chiefs got a day one starter out of this year's NFL draft. Let's keep talking Royals for a little bit longer. 913-576-7610. Rob, do you agree the two biggest disappointments on this team have been Brad Keller and Hunter Dozier? Where Dozier, I think there's a built-in yeah, but. Yeah, he's struggling, but he started with the thumb injury. It's just going to take him a little bit of time to get going. That even though you're playing and active for the most part, doesn't make you healthy and doesn't mean that you're back to where you need to be. So I agree with Denny. I'm willing to give him 100 more ABs, but it's not too much longer. You're going to be able to carry a guy who's hitting under 200 and not really providing you pop or not getting on base at a high enough clip. Like, there's going to come a cutoff date where it's like, all right, hey, we understand it. Maybe take a little bit more time, go down for a little bit, go on the IL, heal yourself, and then come back here. Brad Keller's just been bad. For a guy that the expectations were through the roof, expectations could not have been higher for Brad Keller heading into the season, and he's been one of their biggest disappointments. If this team is going to turn things around, not turn things around. If this team's going to make the playoffs, if they're going to make a legitimate run, it's going to be because Brad Keller got a lot better. I feel like I'm sort of waiting for the other shoe to drop with Danny Duffy just because it has to. He's not ending this season with a 0.6 ERA. It's just not realistic. So at some point, Duffy's ERA goes from 0.6 to 3.7, which everybody would take. Everybody would have taken Duffy giving you 25 or more starts and having that ERA. The time is now coming for Brad Keller to start to regress to the mean of what we think he is. And we don't think he's a 9 ERA guy. They're about three starts. So honestly, about 2.5 weeks from Man, what's up with Brad Keller? And can you continue to keep this guy in your rotation? Can you continue to have a day carved out for him every 4 or 5 days where he can start if he can't even give you 5 quality innings?
No, I totally agree. Regression to the mean is coming with Duffy, but I don't know it's going to be regression to like a bad mean. I think Duffy will probably regress to like a 3 ERA guy, which preseason, every Royals fans would have shot their hand up and said, yes, I'll take that, sign me up. But if Brad Keller's ERA doesn't normalize and he's going to run around 8 or 9 all season long or for any amount of time, this Royals pitching staff's going to need a guy like Daniel Lynch to come up and be great. They're going to need some of these arms to come up maybe a little faster, because if you're not getting your workhorse, your Kevin Apier type, to come in and do what he's supposed to do, gobble up innings and be effective every fifth day, you're in big, big trouble. I don't care how good Danny Duffy is. I don't care if Daniel Lynch exceeds expectations. I don't care if Mike Minor's been fine. If you every fifth day are going to roll out a guy with an 8 ERA who is supposed to be your best pitcher, eventually the 16-10 comes crumbling down. It just does. It can't continue to last forever. So I think Duffy will regress. I think it'll regress to better than we anticipated. But if Keller doesn't, I guess the term is regress, but he needs to progress to what we believe he can be, this pitching staff's kind of in trouble, because Jacob Junis is now in the bullpen. And I know the text line's like, why didn't they put Junis in the starting rotation? Well, they just didn't. They decided to strengthen their bullpen. They decided to go all out on bullpen. It doesn't matter if Junis is a good starter or not, though, because if Brad Keller is bad, if he's bad Keller, it doesn't matter. Someone on the text line does point out that the biggest disappointment is Mondesi. I don't count him as the biggest disappointment. Is that just me? I kind of thought he'd be hurt at some point this season. Like, how could he be a disappointment? Is that just me alone here on island saying he's not a disappointment?
I mean, I don't think it's fair to put him in that category, but I also understand why. If you're coming into it thinking this was a guy that we were counting on, this was a guy that we had expectations for, and just by him being injured, again, he hasn't lived up to him. I do think that's a fair point, but it's hard to put him in the same category as Keller, who we've seen and been bad. It's hard to put him in the same category as Hunter Dozier, who we've seen and be bad. At least he hasn't got the opportunity to disappoint the season, because he hasn't got the opportunity to play this season. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll dive a little deeper into the Chiefs draft. Rob doesn't think that the Chiefs picked up a day one starter in this year's NFL draft. I disagree with them. We'll talk about that in a little bit. I will say this, and I think it goes aligned with what we're going to talk about at the bottom of the hour. I don't think you and the Chiefs see positional value the same way, and not the same way that I see it. Like, you're big on you don't draft a running back in round one under any circumstance, even if it's a future Hall of Fame guy or a guy at the low end of it. I look at it a little bit differently. I wouldn't draft a running back in the top 10 because I think the positional value at that point is really bad. But if we're talking about the back half of the first round or where they drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire on a five-year, well, it's a four-year, $9 million deal with an option for a fifth year, I have no problem with you signing any running back to that contract because it's impossible for that contract to be bad. But I do see the point of, well, it's better to hit at corner. It's better to hit at wide receiver. It's better to hit at rush end. But at the end, all you really want is a productive player on a cheap contract. I think we now have a pretty clear indication the Chiefs don't view positional value that way. Last year, their first selection was a running back. Poor positional value based on how people sort of see the draft. This year in the NFL draft, their first two selections, one is a linebacker. And we're not talking about a edge rush linebacker. I love Nick Bolton. Hashtag M-I-Z. No one thinks that Bolton's playing a traditional 3-4. He's going to be Justin Houston coming off the end and getting sacks. No one thinks that's what Nick Bolton is. Certainly not what he was at Missouri. Not really the defense that the Chiefs run. So that's not what Nick Bolton's going to be. So by a positional value standpoint, Nick Bolton is not a great positional value. You then fast forward to their second selection. You can go edge rusher. You can go wide receiver. Certainly positions that are higher up on the positional value depth chart. And they took an interior offensive lineman. Now, I think they took a guy who's going to be a productive player. I think they took a guy that really fits into their situation and playing the long game here. You now know who the center is going to be in 2022. You had no clue before this weekend. You now possibly know who the right guard is going to be, whether you move Creed Humphrey over. So you at least have one of those two spots on the offensive line, I think, solidified where you didn't before. But I think maybe the biggest gap between you, Rob, and maybe some hardcore football people, because I talked to Matt Lane of Arrowhead Pride this weekend, and his point was very similar. I don't think the Chiefs see positional value that way. If they did, they would have taken a corner early on in the draft. if they saw it that way, they would have took an edge rusher higher up in the draft. I don't think they view positional value the way that you and I view it.
No, they clearly don't. That's one thing that I'll probably end up being wrong. Brett Veach wears a ring and I don't, but he definitely has said with all his drafts and free agents and his maneuverings that positional value doesn't matter to him. He just wants to have good football players. And I know that sounds like a dumb euphemism, but they just want good players. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, for as much as I rail about having a first-round draft pick, and as much as I rail about the fact that he was the fourth best rookie this year, was and is a productive player for the Chiefs offense. Joe Tooney, this offseason, as much as I dislike the fact they spent heavy money on guard, it has fixed the offensive line. So you're right. Me and Brett Veach disagree, but I think at the end of the day, he gets to tap his ring on the podium and be right. I just have to stand here and be wrong.
Coming up on the other side, Rob doesn't think that the Chiefs took a starter in this year's NFL draft. I disagree. I'll explain why. We'll get to it coming up. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio and the brand new Odyssey app.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at LinkedIn.com/decide. That's LinkedIn.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back into The Drive on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app.
I'm just starting to think that Rob has a bigger issue with Brett Veach than I do. You guys think I hate Brett Veach. I genuinely don't hate him. I have my question about some roster building, but I pride myself on not being a hater and giving credit where credit's due. This offseason, Brett Veach had one responsibility: solidify the offensive line. It would appear he has done his one responsibility, and now it's up to Andy to make the rest of it work. I got my questions about corner, but I'm not going to get too up in arms about it while Bashaud Breeland is still sitting there. And I do think they're going to go sign a veteran corner at some point between now and the start of the season. I have some concerns about wide receiver, but that's one of the positions. If their pass coverage is going to be, their pass blocking is going to be a lot better, and you have the best quarterback in the NFL, they can pick up somebody who gets cut. They can trade a future draft pick, acquire a veteran later on in the year, and be perfectly fine at the position. So I'm not going to freak out too much about it. So the Kansas City Chiefs draft picks this year were followed: Nick Bolton out of Missouri, Creed Humphrey out of Oklahoma, Joshua Kando from Florida State, Noah Gray, a tight end from Duke, Cornell Powell from Clemson, and Trey Smith from Tennessee. So coming to work today, Rob and I are having a conversation about the draft, and Rob looks at me and says, I don't think the Chiefs drafted any starters this year in the draft. And I'm sitting there thinking, huh? Number one, if you spend a top 75 pick on an interior offensive lineman, you're counting on that person starting. And at this point, I would say it is a disappointment if Creed Humphrey doesn't start on this offensive line. Think about it. Center is typically a position in your interior spots that if you really want to wait until the fourth, fifth, or sixth round like they did with Trey Smith, you can still pick up a pretty productive player. I mean, this organization has done it before. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, Parker Anger, Nick Allegretti. I mean, they've shown an ability to find some diamond in the rough, some later picks on the interior offensive line, and make something of them. So you would think that they trust their ability to go out there and do it. We wouldn't think this thing if it was a corner. We wouldn't think this if this was a wide receiver. If the Chiefs had spent the 63rd overall pick on a wide receiver, we'd be looking at him as their wide receiver number two. I look at Creed Humphrey as being, behind Landon Dickerson, arguably the best interior lineman or center prospect in the draft. So maybe right now people are putting Blythe because he's the veteran, but he's also on a one-year deal. Well, if Austin Blythe didn't make the team, I wouldn't be super shocked about it. I think he's going to make the team. I think he's there for depth. And if something goes wrong with the rookie, you want a guy who has certainly done it at this level right there. And you want to build an 8-9 offensive line system here. But to me, Creed Humphrey being a starter on this team is almost a foregone conclusion. You don't spend that level of a resource on an interior offensive lineman if you don't feel like he can instantly come in and help you. Nick Bolton to me is a little bit more 50-50. Like if you had to ask me in their starting depth chart for week one, not heading into training camp, but heading into whoever their first game is, will Nick Bolton be on the first team defense? I would say yes. I think he's certainly in the mix to do so. I think his athleticism and his ball tracking ability is going to be something that wins out. And I do think he's going to be a starter. But I'm much more in doubt on Bolton being a starter than I am about Creed Humphrey. Like last year, I would have thought that Willie Gay would have been a foregone conclusion to see significant snaps and time on the field, and that wasn't the case. But I think that Bolton is a better prospect coming out of Missouri than Willie Gay was coming out of Mississippi State. But I at least think at a minimum they got one. I also wouldn't be super surprised if Trey Smith is a starter at right guard. I think from a physical standpoint, he could potentially be the best right guard option that they have. Where his issue and why he fell in the draft has nothing to do with talent and ability, but much more to do with the medicals. So if the medicals can check out and it's a fair competition heading into training camp, which I assume that it's going to be, I think there's a chance that they have two starters. I'd set the over-under on 0.5, and I would say yes on Creed Humphrey. I do think Creed Humphrey is part of their starting offensive line, but I don't think it's crazy to think that there's a chance that Trey Smith is the starting right guard for this team.
Smith and Humphrey are the only two I believe can be starters on day one. Humphrey, for all the reasons you said, and Smith, you're right. The medicals are the issue. It's not the ability, but maybe I'm wrong. You know Nick Bolton better than I do. He's an in-the-box tackling machine. He's not some sort of coverage linebacker, correct? He's like Anthony Hitchens, if we were to profile him out.
That's fair.
You think he's starting over Anthony Hitchens?
Probably
not. If there's one thing this organization loves, it's Anthony Hitchens and Ben Neiman. So, no. Round two, I've always said, need to be starters. 0 for 1 there with Nick Bolton. I think Creed Humphrey can beat out Austin Blythe, but it wouldn't shock me if he didn't. So we'll say half there. I could see it. You're thinking the toolsy rivals guy who never really produced at Florida State and had none sacks last season is starting? No. The tight end, we know he's not starting. And now that leads us to the receiver.
But they also, though, and to be fair, I mean, they also spent their first round. So whoever they had drafted in round one, we would have anticipated that person being a starter.
That's fair.
Where when you don't have a third round pick, so you only have two top 75 picks, because Creed Humphrey was outside the top 60, I don't know how many starters we were going to feel like. I don't care who they drafted in round four. I wouldn't have came out here thinking, well, you can pencil that guy in to be a starter. So I actually don't mind their draft strategy. Let's draft one player we feel pretty confident we can pencil him in for day one in Creed Humphrey. There's no reason that Creed Humphrey shouldn't be the starting center or right guard for this team week one against whoever their opponent is. And then we'll take a little bit more of a long-term play. Sure, right now that might be the Anthony Hitchens role, but next season when we can save $12 million by moving on from Anthony Hitchens, We let Nick Bolton get on the field. He plays 30% of the snaps this year, and then we very easily transition. And then by the third year of Willie Gay, he's paired alongside with Nick Bolton, and we're younger and faster at linebacker. I don't really think that's too bad of a play. I'm also thinking, what positions, Rob, do we think that they could have drafted in round two where I felt like they would have came in and been a starter? I mean, if they had drafted a corner, possibly, but you're also talking about a lot of youth, and I still think they're going to go out and get a veteran. So even if they had drafted a corner in round two, I think there's a possibility that that person still isn't a starter from day one, especially with how much nickel Tyrann Mathieu plays. Wide receiver, possibly, but I don't know how many positions that they have a starting spot available for, if not for the offensive line. So that's kind of how I'm looking at it. I don't really see it as they didn't take a starter in round one and that being a negative. I don't think that there's that many starter spots that are available on this roster. I will say this, and I think it was a pretty smart draft strategy by Brett Veach. If you look at the third day of the draft, so day one, Chiefs didn't have a selection, obviously, because of Orlando Brown. Day two, they pick up Creed Humphrey. We talked about him. We talked about Nick Bolton. And then when you look at day three, you pick up Joshua Kando, Noah Gray, Cornell Powell, and Trey Smith. To me, they're taking athletes. Joshua Kando, in his rivals class, was a top five recruit. Number one defensive lineman in his rivals class. Maybe underperformed in college, but you're thinking the physical traits are there. We get him in this system with what we've done for the defensive line. We think we can get the most out of his physical traits. We also don't need him to play a whole lot in year one. Noah Gray, certainly solidified at tight end. He's not going to be a guy who gets massive targets. We're talking about a top 200 pick, 162 out of Duke, much more of an H-back blocker type. He might get 25 targets this year. Cornell Powell out of Clemson, certainly comes from a first-rate college program. Physical tools all there. A beast physically. Had a great last season at Clemson. So you're taking a gamble on the physical tools and if he can compete at this level. And Trey Smith. I think Trey Smith was a round two or round three prospects, but the medicals pushed him down the board. The Chiefs gambled on athletes in day three, and they gambled on their coaching staff and the ability to get the most out of those players. That's what day three is supposed to be. You're not taking blue chip prospects in day three. It's not how the draft is designed. You're building for depth. You're also taking athletes, and you're taking flyers on guys. I'm taking flyers on guys who passed the athletic test. Trey Smith certainly passed the athletic test. Joshua Kando passed the athletic test. Cornell Powell, same thing. Noah Gray, the exact same thing. I like the strategy from the Kansas City Chiefs. Sure, I would have spent a higher resource on a corner. I would have spent a higher resource on a wide receiver. But linebacker is certainly one of the weaker positions on this team. You get your center for the future to pair with Patrick Mahomes. You get an edge rusher who tests really well physically. You get a wide receiver who had a great year last year in college that can come in and be a plus special teams player and fits right into the mix athletically with this team. I think this ended up being a pretty profitable draft for the Kansas City Chiefs. You also got to factor in the addition of Orlando Brown. Coming up on the other side, we'll take a look at the Chiefs' two second-round selections. At pick 58, they get Nick Bolton. We'll head to Columbia, Missouri, and be joined by Gabe DeArmond of PowerMizzou.com. We'll also head to Norman, Oklahoma with Jason Kersey and learn more about Creed Humphrey, the 63rd overall pick out of Oklahoma. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
Welcome back to The Drive.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the brand new Odyssey app. Coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, we'll catch up with Dayton Moore. Dayton Moore spoke with the media today for about 45 minutes, so I imagine that's about three questions. We'll play the answers to those three questions coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. But right now, we're talking some NFL draft. Let's head to Columbia, Missouri, and learn more about the Chiefs' second-round pick, Nick Bolton, out of hashtag MIZ.
With the 58th pick in the 2021 NFL Draft, the Kansas City Chiefs select Nick Bolton, linebacker, University of Missouri.
So let's head to the phone lines right now and be joined by Gabe DeArmond of PowerMizzou.com. Gabe, how's it going, my man?
Not bad. What's up, Carrington?
Doing good. What kind of player is Nick Bolton?
Gotta just makes pretty much every play. You know, he doesn't have the measurables. That's why he was a second-round guy. I mean,
I don't know, an inch and a half shorter than they want. Maybe the 40 time doesn't pop off the page, but he is a guy that basically for the last 2 years, if a play was made by the Missouri defense, he was in the middle of it, whether that was in coverage or coming up and making a tackle. Just a guy that really you come out of every game, and he was one of the best players on the field. And I think went probably in the round everybody expected, maybe a few spots below where most people expected. But I think most people had him somewhere between 40 and 60 in this draft.
You and I certainly watched a lot of Nick Bolton. To me, he seems like a C-ball, hit-ball kind of guy, and he does a really good job sort of manning the middle of the field, where if a player comes over the middle, he's certainly going to let his presence be known. I do have some questions about how he can cover at this level. What do you think about his coverage ability, and do you think that's something that can progress now at this next level?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he did a pretty good job of it for Missouri in the SEC, which is obviously, you know, 65 players picked. He covered a lot of guys like what he's going to see in the NFL. Now, can he do it in one-on-one coverage consistently? I'm not sure, but you know, he made a huge play on I forget if it was third or fourth down against LSU in their goal line stand this year, knocking down a pass in the flat. Had some picks along the way, so I think he can do it. He's an athletic guy. Again, just not a guy that maybe jumps off the page at you when you're looking at it, but if you watch him play football, he gets the job done.
Gabe, when you watch Nick Bolton, do you think he's a guy that can start day one, or do you think he's going to need some time behind Anthony Hitchens to then come in and start?
Yeah, I don't know if he's a day one starter for the – I mean, there are teams I think he could start day one for, but obviously, you know, I know a fair amount about the Chiefs, and I think the idea was, hey, you bring him in, you've got Hitchens here. And then maybe a year from now, I don't know his contract situation exactly, but maybe a year from now it's Bolton and Willie Gay. But I think he's probably not a start day one, three down linebacker type of guy, but I don't think the Chiefs need that.
Just because we're talking to a lot of Missouri fans and also Chiefs fans simultaneously like yourself, what do you think this draft means for the program? I mean, this was one of the better NFL drafts for Missouri in terms of putting prospects into the league. What do you think this means long-term for the program?
Yeah, it's the most they've had since 2015. Second most they've had in the Common Draft era behind 2009. But, you know, I actually wrote something this morning. It was pretty interesting. Those 2 years that I talked about, 2015 came off back-to-back SEC East championship. 2009 came off back-to-back Big 12 title game appearances. 2021 came off 11-11 over the last 2 years. So, you know, the talent seemed to be a little bit more than what Missouri managed to put on the field the last 2 years. And getting five guys drafted is good. Now the key is they've got to get back to where they were 10, 15 years ago, which is those guys are going on day one and day two, you know, not four of the five on day three. So I think it's a step. I think it's a good sign for Missouri, but, you know, 10th most draft picks in the country and 6th most in their own conference. So that's still a little bit of ground to make up.
That is Gabe DeArmond of PowerMizzou.com joining us on the show today to take a closer look at the 58th overall pick, Nick Bolton, selected by the Kansas City Chiefs. Thanks, Gabe.
All right, have a good one.
Absolutely. That's Gabe DeArmond of PowerMizzou.com. Let's head to Norman, Oklahoma, and learn more about Creed Humphrey.
With the 63rd pick in the 2021 draft, the Kansas City Chiefs select Creed Humphrey, center, Oklahoma.
So let's head to Norman, Oklahoma, and be joined by Jason Kersey. He covers the Oklahoma Sooners. Jason, appreciate you hopping on.
You know, if I'd known that I was going to have to go after Gabe DeArmond, I wouldn't have even agreed to do this. I just want that for the record.
Jason, what kind of player is Creed Humphrey?
Creed's been a three-year starter at Oklahoma. You know, he was the best offensive lineman in the Big 12. His sophomore and junior year, team leader, really talented player, probably the most talented center to play at OU, maybe ever. And he's played with some really good quarterbacks, which I think sort of makes him well-suited to play with Patrick Mahomes. This is a guy who's played with Kyler Murray. He's played with Jalen Hurts. He played on the same team with Baker Mayfield. Maybe wasn't starting then, but there's a lot to like about him.
Why was he available in round two? Because if you're simply doing the say it out loud test, best offensive lineman in the Big 12, didn't give up a sack in 3 years, comes from a major university of football power in Oklahoma. I'm surprised the player of his caliber is even available in the back half of the second round.
It's a fair point. I sort of wondered that myself. I wasn't sure if he'd go in the first round, but I certainly thought he'd be gone by the time the Chiefs picked.
Jason, if you can describe him as a player for people who haven't watched him nearly as closely as you, how would you kind of describe him as a player?
Well, I mean, he's extremely athletic for being an interior offensive lineman. I mean, I think that's the thing that surprises people about him. His 40 time was good during OU's pro day. One teammate described him as like Frankenstein. This was Ronnie Perkins, who was drafted in the third round the other night, described Creed Humphrey as like Frankenstein because he's an athletic freak. He used to go out before games and catch punts during warmups. He would catch punt returns. Those are the kinds of things he can do. But he's also really strong and really powerful. And like you mentioned, I mean, he didn't give up sacks. He was just sort of a reliable piece of that OU offensive line.
So obviously, Jason, you watched the Super Bowl, so you saw how bad Kansas City's offensive line was the last time that we saw him. Do you think that Creed Humphrey is somebody who can start day one in the NFL?
I do. I do think that he is, and I think that he could play guard, too. I think that that's the kind of guy he is. I think he's smart enough to grasp things quickly, and I definitely think he's talented enough for it. So I think it'll be interesting to see how he factors in.
That is Jason Kersey, who covers the Oklahoma Sooners as the beat writer for The Athletic. Jason, appreciate you hopping on today to tell us everything about Creed Humphrey, man.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. That is Jason Kersey. Couldn't wait to get off the phone here. Couldn't wait to get off the phone with us. I like their two second round selections. I think they serve different purposes, where I think Creed is going to potentially be a day one starter for this team and probably should be a day one starter. Certainly from a talent standpoint, I think he's a great prospect. And then you look at it with Nick Bolton, maybe not as much of a meets the immediate need that this team has at linebacker. But if you look at the contract for Anthony Hitchens, this is basically the last year of his deal. The Chiefs will save $12 million by releasing Anthony Hitchens at the end of this football season. So you move on from Anthony Hitchens or get him to substantially restructure his contract, and then Nick Bolton's ready to step in, and then you got Nick Bolton on one side, you got Willie Gay Jr. on the other side, and you're a lot younger, cheaper, and more athletic at the linebacker position. Speaking of the draft, coming up at the top of the hour, we'll keep this conversation going about the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll open up the phone lines and take your phone calls, 913-576-7610. The Kansas City Chiefs have completely overhauled their offensive line. We'll break it down next. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.